The Discover Ag podcast is brought to you by Case IH. Case IH has solutions for every challenge, equipment for every farm. Case IH is built by farmers.
You're listening to a 58 Ember production.
Good morning, Discovering Discos. This week, we discover how Swifties will soon have a new favorite steakhouse to visit while in Kansas City, the surprising trend that is making it harder for actual farmers to buy land, and a deep dive into the Canadian city that shows us winter weather is no reason to stop eating locally.
Welcome to Discover Ag, where food meets pop culture. We're your hosts, Natalie and Tara, millennial cattle rancher and dairy farmer, and every Thursday, we take you beyond the headlines to discover what's new in the world of food. I feel like there's two people turning into this podcast right now, and one of them is the people that are maybe looking for a break from Taylor Swift, and you, the very first word out of your mouth is Swifties. And
Swifties.
There is the other group of people who are Swifties and are like, yes, give me all of the Taylor news. And that is where we're at on this wonderful Thursday morning.
And the big question is actually, where do you lie?
I think you and I lie very similarly, actually, on this, is we appreciate Taylor Swift for who she is and, like, just how incredible she is, her marketing, her everything she has built and done. But I wouldn't classify myself as a Swiftie. Like, I don't know all her songs. I was not going to be buying the tickets to her concert. I don't fall in that category. So maybe somewhere in the middle, which I feel like is not allowed, actually.
I know. It's frowned upon. You must choose a side.
Pick a side and stay there. All right. With that, what's our first article, Natalie?
I was going to say good news for those that are, you know, the non-Swifty, maybe adjacent side. We are not actually going to be covering Taylor. We are going to be covering her famous boyfriend. So first article, Discover, headline, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce to open 1587 Prime Steakhouse. So the teammates are taking their partnership off the field and into the restaurant world.
When I first read this headline, I feel like I did what I do with so many of these like celeb things where they're making an alcohol or they're opening a restaurant. You're like, are they really? And I loved that this article started with talking about how they actually are partnering with a restaurant company. So their names, their faces are going to be on it, but they are partnering with Noble 33. And Noble 33 has more than a dozen other restaurants, probably some names that people have heard of, like Toca Madera and Scottsdale in Vegas, which we'll talk about more later. Casa Madera, Sparrow Italiana, some Mediterranean one. There's a few different ones, but they're in major cities across the country, around the world.
Yeah, I agree. When I saw this headline, I too wondered if it was, you know, fake news or not. But I actually think it's very fitting. Like when I saw it, I didn't question it so much as like, think it's weird, I guess. Kind of like going back to a couple weeks ago, we covered Kylie and an alcohol drink. And that we talked about how we weren't surprised that Kylie Jenner was doing it. But for me, it didn't like scream on brand for her. But when I did see this headline, I did think like Jason Kelce and Patrick Mahomes and a steakhouse to me does fit. Like, I don't know. There's something about it. There was actually one of the articles I was reading where they quoted that Travis Kelce for his birthday, he visited kind of a more infamous steakhouse in Kansas City and he ordered a giant medium rare porterhouse with a fillet on the side. And I was like, that tracks. Like, I don't know, meat and football and these guys just make sense to me.
I also think it is like such an ode to Kansas City of like what it's known for, where it's located, like just being in the heart of the country, like cattle country surrounding it. It really does. It fits really well. I will say, though, out of all the locations that Noble 33 has, Kansas City is definitely off the beaten path for them.
So we have actually eaten at Noble 33 establishment.
I've eaten at two. So that's what I was going to say when I mentioned Toca Madera. I've eaten at the one in Scottsdale and I've also eaten at the one in Vegas. And we were in Vegas for Luke's 40th birthday and we went to a Toca Madera. And I will say it is an experience and it makes me so curious what this one will be like with Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes.
So curious. So it's very upscale, very like chic, modern. And I have to say, when I first read steakhouse, I think it's maybe growing up Montana around a bunch of like steakhouses, but I think of old, rustic, like historic, stuffy. You know?
Yeah.
And I was like, that is not the vibes this is giving. They're calling it a modern American steakhouse. And we actually shared to, you know, Discover Instagram page pictures of the inside of this, you guys. So you can go, maybe you've already seen that post, maybe you haven't, but you can go and see and get this kind of visual representation of what their steakhouse will look like. And on one hand, I'm like, it totally fits, again, on brand, like Travis Kelce, very, I mean, you've seen, if you watched any sort of football, you see how he shows up to games in the fits, you know, he's all about like fashion and statement and all of that. But on the same hand, they're also, he's like a good old boy, you know? And so I could have also seen him going that like old fashioned steakhouse that I think I would have maybe preferred. But as we keep saying, they partnered with this company and this is just like, this is the kind of establishment they roll out.
I'm just curious what all it will be like, because obviously there's some draw to being able to see Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, but they're not obviously going to be there every single night. So what else are they going to offer? Like the one in Scottsdale had like trees growing throughout the restaurant. I think Vegas's did too, but Vegas's had like a woman swallowing fireballs, like literally balls of fire. She was like, do you remember that? You're
no.
making a weird face.
You can tell by like my face that I'm like, was I present? And you're like, yes, you were sitting next to me. And I cannot, I
sitting
cannot
there, remember. And we all were like, oh my gosh, that girl's gonna catch on fire. Like, what is happening right now?
I do remember that the drink I ordered there had honey in it, and it was a whole presentation. I mean, it had like edible flowers, it had a little honey stick that they put in the drink. I mean, it is like most of, like, it's 6 stars out of 5 stars, you know, like that's the kind of establishment these places are.
The Tocamadera I went to in Scottsdale, the girl ordered like the Dia de los Muertos, I think, drink or something. First of all, it cost $75 for one drink. I know. I put the credit, or I put the bill on my credit card, and then people like Venmoed me afterwards. And I was like, I hope that girl knew how much that drink cost. I am not paying for it. But it was a whole presentation. It came out like smoking. It like looked, I don't know, it looked like it sounded, as the name would suggest, and was really, really crazy. But I was going to say, not only were you captivated by the drink, you were also captivated by the steak salad that you had. So I'm not surprised you were distracted from the girl swallowing fire.
That is still one of the top 3 salads I've had in my life. One was in Italy.
Of course it is.
That one was there, and one was in Savannah, Georgia. So I have 2 directions I want to take this. I want to circle back around to the price of food, because I actually have a very fun fact about football, and they're called rookie dinners that I learned about. But
me too. I just heard about this.
Yes. Okay. So we'll cover that in a second. But staying on the track of like the vibe and the environment of their restaurant, I do think it'll be interesting. You said like what will draw people in. They mentioned that it's going to be 2-level steakhouse. It's actually going to be in the lobby of this low hotel in Kansas City. And it will have multiple private dining rooms, which probably great for, you know, intimate celebrity gatherings. It's going to have one of the largest wine collections in the state of Missouri, which I'm not sure how hard that is to claim that title, being, you know, like wine in Missouri.
Wait, can I tell you that I know Kansas City is in Missouri? I know that like in my core, but I forget that. I forget it all the time. And when I read that and was like, it's going to have the largest wine collection in the state of Missouri, I'm not going to lie, for 1 second, I was like, that's weird. Why didn't they say Kansas? Like, face, like palm to face. And I was like, Tara, Kansas City is in Missouri. It is not in Kansas. Like, get it together. But that is, it's confusing. I'm sorry. You and I went to Kansas City one time, and I remember the whole time being like, are we in Kansas or are we in Missouri? I don't know which, because we kept crossing over the border.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's right across the river, right? That's the confusing thing for people. Well, also that's like Kansas City, you know, it's called that and it's not in there. But I think that's part of it, is that it's so close to the border that it is really confusing. But the article said that they will have hyper subtle nods to Patrick and Travis's on-field accomplishments. And when I saw the pictures of the venue, I was like, well, they're not going to be like hanging up their jerseys and, you know, like putting trophies around. So I'm so curious, as you were saying, like, how will they weave Travis and Pat into this? Like, will it be like drinks named after them, or will they have a cut of their choice? Like, how will they keep this, you know, upper class kind of establishment feel that they want, but work in these 2 personalities? I think that'll be so interesting to watch.
Yeah, I wonder that too, because jerseys hanging on the wall, I'm not going to lie, it's like giving Buffalo Wild Wings, and I don't think...
Exactly.
I don't think that 1587 Prime is... is that. It's not going to be that. So what are they going to do that doesn't make it feel like a sports bar?
So you just said the name, which we've said a couple times, 1587. But I do want to, for people that have not read anything or heard anything about this, that is named after their jerseys, which is, I think, a fun little fact. So Patrick is 15, Travis is 87. And I think this is pretty common knowledge, but if it's not, I just love this little fact, I guess, about why Travis Kelce chose his football number. He chose 87 because that was the year his brother Jason was born. And he always attributes their success and the legacy they have together as brothers to Jason starting it all. And so that is his little nod to his brother. And I just think, I don't know if it's that I'm like a boy mom or what it is, but like they could have gone the route of being hyper competitive brothers. And I feel like they are close and just rooting each other on. And I truly love their relationship as brothers. And I think it's so cool. That's why he chose the jersey.
I actually needed that little boost of morale that siblings will get along one day as I'm listening to my daughters scream at each other downstairs, hoping the mic doesn't pick it up and hoping my mom comes any minute now to pick them up to take them to homeschool. I apologize in advance. Not all siblings get along like Jason and Travis, okay? So if you want to go, though, to this restaurant, you're going to have to wait a little while. It's opening in 2025. And I actually listened to Jason and Travis talk about this on their podcast. And when they said that it didn't open until 2025, I was like, wow, that's a really long time away. Like, how many years is it going to take to build? And then kind of like the Kansas City thing, it dawned on me. That's actually next year. It's opening in 1 year from now. It's not that far away at all.
Well, and we're like halfway through 2024, kind of. I mean, if you round up, which I do a lot, I round up and down to my benefit, depending on what.
It's basically summer. The year is halfway over at this point. Like, we're rolling into May right now.
We're like 2024 is done. We're practically halfway through it.
So early 2025, you too can go to Kansas City and experience this restaurant is the point in my tangent.
We should. It's not that far. I could drive down. Maybe for the grand opening, I will. I'll just hop right in my car and head on down.
When we went, you drove and I flew and you picked me up.
Yeah,
so we could totally do that.
Somewhere between 4 and 5 hours for me. It's really, which in Midwest terminology is, you know, just a matter of.
It's like next door.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much. It's like going grocery shopping for you.
Literally. Oh, so let's talk about this rookie dinner because I had never heard of these and it just blows my mind. So this is a thing, apparently, and I think it's present with some teams and present with not some teams. But essentially, Jason was asking Travis if he thinks rookie dinners would go down at his establishment. And that is where every member of a position of the team goes and eats together. And then the rookies, usually there's multiple, have to pay for the bill. And this is not like McDonald's or Arby's they're going to. These are like fine dining establishments. And one of the most recent rookie dinners to make the news was the Browns, and they racked up a $40,000 bill that the rookies had to pay for. There was two rookies.
Oh my gosh.
Can you even?
I know. I can't even imagine. I mean, some of those rookies don't sign multi-million dollar contracts. Like, some of them are like lucky to be getting on the team at all.
That's what they were talking about on the podcast about how, if anything, it should be like flip-flopped and they should be teaching these poor rookies money management skills and like the older established ones should be paying for the meal.
Seriously, that's outrageous. It's funny that it was the Browns, you know, the hometown of Jason and Travis. Mm-hmm. But that is unbelievable. I wonder where they went. I wonder what they ordered. I'd be so curious. Like, were people just buying things just to buy things and like rack up the bill? Or are you like seriously there eating? Like, what is... I want to be a fly on the wall.
Well, I think half and half probably. I mean, I think they probably order the most outlandish thing, but I don't think they're just ordering to order and not consuming. I mean, going back to how you just mentioned, you know, a Toca Madera has, or whatever establishment was, has a $100 drink. If you think if you have 10 men and how many drinks they drink, I mean, you could rack up with like these fancy alcohol. And then if you're ordering the porterhouse, you know, I mean, I mean, $40,000 is absolutely ridiculous. I have no idea what happened. But I feel like that happens all the time when you go out to dinner and you're like, well, that escalated quickly. You know, like, how did we get to where we got with this bill?
So this is actually not outside of the total wheelhouse of Mahomes and Kelce. They have actually also invested in a pickleball restaurant concept known as the Chicken and Pickle that I thought was worth noting.
And I wonder if that's profitable. Do you think that's profitable?
I don't know. And then Mahomes also owns a Whataburger franchise, which really tracks being from Texas. I feel like that makes sense.
Whataburger. Yes. It's water. You say water.
Whataburger. Whataburger. That's how I say it. I don't know. In New Mexico, we have Blake's Whataburger. It's like very confusing. There's so many of them. I'm like, how many words can we put before the word burger before
burger?
Give it up. Like, fat.
Well, that is actually one of my favorite things, I think, about these two is I do feel like they live and breathe Kansas City. Like, they love their community. They give back to their community. So, I mean, obviously they're in it for the dollars, but I also think they are trying to build up their hometown, offer different things. I mean, Jason, I think I sent you on Instagram how he is hosting like a music festival there. I cannot remember what it's called now, but I do feel like they care about the community and try and give back, which I think is super cool about them.
Yeah, it is really cool. I mean, except for when he's obviously like in the Bahamas with Taylor Swift chilling on the beach, then he's, you know, he's a diehard Kansas City person, except for when he's following Taylor
out of sight, out of mind. You know, like, he cares about Kansas when he's there, Kansas City when he's there. Otherwise, he has other things on his mind.
You know, it was so crazy that this is a total side tangent, but when Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce were in the Bahamas, did you see their beach photos? Did you notice what was in the background in their beach photos?
Yes, I did, because I saw it on your Instagram stories. One of our Discover sponsors was present with Taylor and Kelce, none other than
Turtle Box.
I mean, I thought that was so cool when I saw that.
Me too, which means you and I are like one degree of separation. Like, we own a Turtle Box. They own a Turtle Box. Mm-hmm.
We should get together and jam with our Turtle Boxes. We could connect them, because you can connect them and play a Taylor Swift song. Listen, Taylor, we'll even play one of your songs. We would love to do that. We get down, have some steaks. Be great.
Yeah, the invitation's out there for us to do that together and have a party, a little Turtle Box party. So when you crawl into bed at the end of a long day, there is nothing better than getting into soft, luxurious sheets. That's why Natalie and I are sleeping on Cozy Earth sheets.
Cozy Earth crafts luxury goods that transform your lifestyle. They have been featured on Oprah's Favorite Things 5 years in a row. They are worth the cost. Cozy Earth sheets have been in our sheet rotation for almost a month now, and Luke and I are so impressed. The first time I changed them after I put them on, Luke actually commented asking when I could put the old sheets back on again.
Beyond just sheets and bedding, Cozy Earth also has loungewear that comes in a variety of different styles and colors. And you guys, I am living in these loungewear sets. I have actually been a fan of their pajamas for years now. I got my first pair when Annalise was little, and they still look and feel amazing.
All Cozy Earth products come with a 10-year warranty, and Cozy Earth was kind enough to provide an exclusive offer for you guys, our discos. If you go to www.cozyearth.com and use code DISCOVER, you can get up to 35% off their site.
So one more time, that's www.cozyearth.com and use code DISCOVER to get 35% off site-wide.
All right, diving into the second article to discover this week. Headline, the farmhouse craze is making it harder for actual farmers to buy land. The popularity of the farm aesthetic and farmhouse lifestyle is creating real estate problems among working farmers, especially younger and newer ones who already face challenges in finding affordable land across the country. So this story is actually from Ambrook Research, which is a new outlet that we have recently discovered, as well as a new sponsor. So welcome to the Discover Ag, Ambrook. You guys know that we are always on the hunt for good places for, you know, interesting and unique ag and food articles. We try and do our best to cover out-of-the-box ideas. And I feel like when we discovered Ambrook, we were like, oh, wow, they deliver exactly what we're looking for. The interesting thing is that they're also an ag tech company that's building accounting software designed specifically for American farmers and ranchers. So in addition to this editorial component that Tara and I found, they have this ag tech, you know, software site as well. And I know we have a lot of farmers and ranchers tuning in. So if you are looking for an easy-to-use finance solution that is built just for you, visit Ambrook. ambrook.com/discover to get 1 month for free.
And don't forget to check out the Ambrook research as well. It's the editorial component that Natalie just mentioned. They are independent from Ambrook and they cover such a wide variety of topics in modern agriculture. We are loving so many of their articles. We're going to be covering more in the next couple of weeks. But in our Club Discover newsletter a few weeks ago, we actually recommended a podcast that they are producing called The Only Thing That Lasts. It is hosted by ag journalist Sarah Mock and is an 8-part series uncovering the mysteries of the American farmland. And again, if you are a farmer or rancher in need of an easy to use financial solution, visit ambrook.com/discover to get a month free or click the link in our show notes.
Okay, so back to the article, this idea of farmhouse versus farmers. I kind of feel like it is. There's this theme, the core theme to this article was that across the country, farmland, I feel like they specifically pointed out like farmland kind of within driving distance of towns is being purchased up by non-farmers. So I feel like we're kind of focusing in more like urban areas.
Yeah, it's definitely that like adjacent to a city area, right? That people are like wanting to be just outside the city, but like close enough to all of the amenities. Totally. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of Farmer Wants a Wife when the one just outside of Nashville, like he was like, I'm on a farm. Yes. And I'm like, you're 30 minutes from Nashville.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very different than the one that was like in the middle of nowhere, Colorado.
Right. Exactly. I will say this also focused a lot on the East Coast kind of, which was interesting. Like a lot of the towns they mentioned were outside of Washington, D.C. or upstate New York and those kind of things where you are in very like densely populated metropolitan areas and you want to like escape, which I realize is the same on the West Coast as well. But I don't feel like they were talking about like just outside of Dallas or just outside of Houston. It was the major coastlines.
Yes. And they also, which to no surprise, it made absolute sense to me. I mean, you and I have actually talked about this a lot, but they kind of give the origin point of COVID and how, you know, 2020 is what really teed up this change for people, these, you know, urban sprawls to want to kind of get away. But again, not go anywhere else, which we'll dive into this, but part of the problem. It's you're scooping up farmland, not for farmland use, because it is people that are very unfamiliar with the lifestyle and don't really have an interest in the lifestyle. Well, no, they don't have an interest, I guess, in the like job portion of the lifestyle. They do have an interest in like the living portion of the lifestyle. If that like came out wrong, but I tried, you guys.
I think we know what you mean. I also think there's two like forces working together in this. One is the farmhouse craze of like wanting, you know, you think about like the trad wife that's going on like TikTok and just this whole idea of, you know, cooking sourdough, having a garden at the same time as COVID. And I don't think they're like mutually exclusive. I think they're related. But we also have the real fact that COVID created this place for a lot more remote workers. And so as of August of 2023, over 12% of the U.S. workforce is completely remote and more than 4.7 million workers are remote at least half the time. So with that, you can move outside of a city and still have the city job and still have the benefits of a big city job, but you can now live someplace else.
I think about that so much because so I grew up in Montana, Bozeman area, and Bozeman is starting to be a, you know, one of the larger cities in Montana and also a place that people from out of state are choosing to relocate to. And real estate has changed so much and the amount of people living there has changed a lot. And I always am like, what are they doing in Bozeman? Because there is the hospital there that is like a large employer operation. And there's a couple other, you know, I'd say, I guess, quote unquote, larger businesses. But there is nothing major there to house that or employ that many people that are housed there. And it's that. It is remote workers, I think, because I don't know what else they could be doing there for employment, especially at the prices that they're living there for.
Do you know what sometimes I will think about randomly that has nothing to do with me, is none of my business, is thinking about this fact that you sold your house in Bozeman. Like, do you ever just think, why did I do that?
It is my biggest life regret. It is my absolute biggest life regret that I sold my house when I moved. I wouldn't even be doing this podcast. I would just be kicking my feet up in the Bahamas with Travis and Taylor because I would be sitting on a little nest egg of money if I still owned property there.
Yeah, just something I think about occasionally, not to like put salt in the wound.
Okay, so back to something we know well, social media. And you talked about how this is playing a role with COVID. And it is. The popularity of the farm aesthetic online is insane. We all know it. We've all seen it. We have all, I don't know, consumed it in some form. They actually talked about how the hashtag farmhouse style has 4.6 million posts on Instagram alone.
I was honestly surprised it was that low. Like I mean, and I know there's like a million other hashtags, like hashtag farmhouse, you know, there's a ton of others, but I was like, I just feel like you cannot scroll through social media without seeing like the romanticized version of agriculture, I guess, is what I kind of, the picture I'm painting in my head.
Yep. Rolling hills, broad wrapped around porches, clean baby goats, clean mudrooms. I always think about that. I'm like, that's not a farmhouse. Come to my mudroom. That is a farmhouse. You know, you're like, oh yeah, that is a mudroom, farmhouse mudroom.
100%.
So another, speaking of that, of kind of this, I guess, positive light forward aspect, another part of this puzzle, another piece of the equation is celebrities and the role they play in this. And I do think it is the trifecta between the three, social media, COVID, and celebrities, and specifically probably celebrities on social media, because there is a trend. I mean, we have covered it a handful of different times on the podcast, of celebrities, you know, who want to leave LA, leave Hollywood, that fast-paced culture, and they're seeking out this kind of rural, you know, I guess, or I want to say Western, but not really. I guess just an urban, rural lifestyle. But again, it's not like a true accurate depiction of, you know, scooping up the poop. And I always wonder what they think when they get out there. They're like, it's a little different than we thought it would be, or if they like love it immediately.
No, and it's actually like a very serious thing. There is laws. I know New Mexico has one. I think I'm sure other states have one. I'm obviously just familiar with New Mexico, but there is like a law that's like the Right to Farm Act that basically is like, just because you move out into a country next to a farm wanting kind of this picturesque lifestyle, you cannot be mad when the farm is like fully functioning and operational. So that means there's flies. Or even in this article, it talked about if you have manure being spread on a field from, you know, the nearby dairy, like there is real realities of actual farm work that are not so picturesque, that are not being highlighted on social media. And that when you move out to the country, you need to be like fully ready to accept that reality as well.
Yeah, there was actually a quote from, I believe it was, they interviewed a director of land conservation in New York, and he said, quote, "What we see is that folks oftentimes are very interested in the rural landscape, the rural aesthetic, and at the same time, we're having fewer and fewer farmers." And I think that's like a perfect sentiment of kind of the reality of what's happening.
Yeah, at that same time, another statistic that's kind of crazy is almost 60% of young farmers, which was defined as under 40. Natalie, we only have a couple years left of being defined as young. But anyway,
soak it up.
Yeah, seriously, finding affordable land to buy is very or extremely challenging. So obviously this all like goes back to the fact that people who actually want to farm and grow the food for this country cannot afford the land anymore to farm on.
Yeah, which we, again, we've also covered this. I mean, I actually have a story I'm going to tell you guys in a second. I just thought of this. Because what I was going to say is we covered this when athletes were in the news. I think they were they baseball players or basketball or a combination? I can't remember now.
You're asking the wrong person.
You were part of the podcast.
Yeah. Athletes.
Asking the wrong co-host. I need to ask my other co-host.
Listen, I just stacked it up as to famous athletes, bought some land, don't know what ball they used or what they played.
Oh my gosh, that is so Tara Core. So we've talked about this, you know, a handful of times, that land is a good investment, right? If you have money, it makes sense you're going to come in it and have land. And I thought it was actually interesting that this article, they brought a quote in perspective from someone that said that they can't pass moral judgment to say certain people are more right for having access to land than others. And I thought that was really interesting because obviously we're a little bit biased and we would love to see farmland stay in the hands of, you know, especially young farmers and ranchers. But I had never really also thought about that, that just because, you know, we're a farm and rancher doesn't mean we're more entitled to the land than anyone else. again, a more nuanced conversation would be we need food production. So as we're starting to see food production phased out and for other things, like what does that mean for the country? But I just thought it was really interesting that they had that kind of moral statement in there. It did make me pause for a second, and I appreciated that.
No, I agree. And I actually learned a new word when reading this article. It's called agri-hoods.
Yeah. Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. Which I thought maybe was an interesting solution, not a solution, but an interesting concept to all of this. So essentially an agri-hood is developments that are anchored by a farm that's worked by people other than the homeowners. So the agri-hood is like a residential neighborhood centered around a community of farming. And so you're going to have a farmer who's actually farming the land, but then this like community gets to be a part of it, whether there is, you know, like a large community garden and other aspects where maybe they're, you know, collect, you know, they get to buy from those goods. And it makes them feel a part of the actual farming aspect, but they're not actually doing the work. And it's almost like a live-in agritourism feel is kind of what I envision. Mm-hmm. But then you're working together versus like working against each other.
So another thing they mentioned along with that same vein of thought was conservation easement. So that's, again, like, I don't know if solution is the right word, but that's what we'll keep saying. And basically, actually, Ambrook has another really great article on this. I was reading it because I wanted to learn more about conservation easements. I had heard the term before, but I had never dived much into it. But Ambrook's article is called "Would You Bequeath Your Land to a Stranger?" And essentially what a conservation easement is agreement between a landowner and then like a government agency or a land trust or someone that is designed to protect the land from future development. So there are, for people who are very passionate about keeping farmland as farmland, you could look into conservation easements, which I did not know much about.
I have also heard that word a lot and also didn't exactly, I feel like, know what it meant. So thank you for the explanation. What else you got for us, though, on this article?
Yeah, I want to actually tell my story because I feel like this is such serendipitous. But I actually got an email the other day, 2 days ago, and it is from a ex, you know, now retired professional athlete that wanted to set up a meeting with Luke and I because he just bought land and is interested on how to actually make, like, turn it and make a profit. And I thought it was so cool that I don't know.
Are you going to tell us who? Are you going to name
it? I don't know yet. Maybe, like, I'll keep you guys up to date. Maybe, like, on our personal episodes, like, as
can we get, like, maybe what sport he plays? Like, can we get something, like, some kind of, like, Easter egg?
Baseball. I did not recognize his name. I mean, he's not, like, a famous player. It's not like Alex Rodriguez, like, called us or anything. I don't know. I'm guessing he found me on, like, LinkedIn. I don't even know how he found me. But I thought it was interesting because, I mean, we have talked about obviously several different things that happen when you buy land. And I thought this was such a perfect example of kind of one thing we talked about, which is how people know that land is a good investment, but the realities of actually turning that into a profit is maybe a little bit more steep than some people realize. And so I thought it was really cool that this athlete is out there like looking, you know, for resources and guidance to help him actually make this working land instead of, you know, what this article is talking about is that it goes out of working land or, you know, some of the other things we've talked about. I just thought it was really cool. So I'll keep you guys up to date on our personal episodes as this transgresses, if anything, you know, exciting comes from it.
Literally not me in every single disco going on Onyx and like trying to see who's like famous owns land in Nebraska and being like, who is it? We're going to figure it out.
No, the land isn't here in Nebraska. I don't think. I think it's where like in the kind of this area, like the East Coast.
Oh, shoot. Well, that does not narrow it down. We cannot play detective here. It would take a lot of work. As we are all becoming more conscientious of what we are putting in our bodies, we should also be looking at what we are putting on our bodies and our faces. Rolling up to my mid-30s this year, I realized I wanted to step up my skincare routine. But as I was looking for products, I wanted ingredients I believed in, like beef tallow. Enter Tubes & Co. Tubes & Co.'s entire skincare and makeup line is 100% natural and uses only organic ingredients like grass-fed tallow, aloe vera, cold-pressed olive oil, and they are committed to never using synthetic chemicals, GMOs, toxins, fillers, artificial colors, or fragrances. Tubes & Co. is a husband and wife team that believes it's not good enough for you until it's good enough for their own family. They go above and beyond to source organic products made in the United States and support support small family-owned farms. I personally love a wide range of their products, from their skincare line, I love the basic beef tallow balm, to the hydrating stick, and for their makeup, I love the blush and so much more. I know that Natalie uses their body wash, toner, mascara, and tons of other products. If you want to try Tubes & Co. for yourself, go to tubesandco.com, use our code DISCOVER to save yourself some money, or click the link in our show notes and use code DISCOVER.
All right, diving into the last and final article to discover this week, headline, if Montreal can feed itself year-round, more cities can. It's relatively easy to eat local in warm weather locations like California, where pomegranates, apricots, cherries, avocados, and lemon trees literally bloom on city streets and yards across the state. But what about cold weather states? Well, Montreal, a rather cold, rainy city, has been dubbed the world capital of urban agriculture, driving home the point that if they can make it work there, we can do it anywhere.
I'm not going to lie. When you first wanted to cover this article, it was one of those ones where I was like, I know. Really, Natalie?
You did not want to. I had to stand my ground on this one.
You did.
I loved the idea of it. I love diving into it. Did you have a change of heart?
Yeah, because I think so many times we've talked about on this podcast, like if you want to eat local or be sustainable or all those things we've talked about, like then you're having beef in Nebraska and there's not a lot of other options, right? Like you're not having the avocado. That's always what I go to, is that people love their avocado toast, but like then want to talk about eating locally. And it's like not every place is California. And so I did love this, that like Montreal, the average temperature in February is around 10 degrees Fahrenheit, and they are producing all sorts of food and like mass quantities. This is not just a little bit of food. It is actually like to a point where they would like to be eventually self-sustainable.
Yeah, their food autonomy is insane. The province is 50% self-sufficient. That is absolutely insane, you guys. Let me just repeat that. Slow down, put down your laundry basket or turn down, I don't know. Don't turn. I was going to say turn on the music in the car, but you don't
do that. In the car going, we are the music.
But 50% self-sufficient, that is what they're providing their citizens with locally grown produce year round. They have the goal of reaching 80%. That blows my absolute mind. Like you said, their summer begins at the end of June, or starts at the end of June and ends in September. And as someone who bitches all the time about what it is like to have a garden for a short period of time, I feel like Montreal is making me eat their words, my words. You know, it's like, look at what they're doing with the weather, like you said, in their area. It's crazy.
So a couple numbers, because you said 50%. Like Montreal is not the biggest city in the world, but it's not small. It has over 2 million people. It's the second largest city behind Toronto in Canada. And so it has people. Like it's feeding people. And to put that...
There are people that live there. There's people that live there. Breaking news on Discover this week.
Can I tell you Montreal the funniest story? When I was in college, one of my best friends was from just outside New York City. So again, obviously major metropolitan area. And I drove her to New Mexico one time and we came up over a hill into the first town in New Mexico. And it's a decent sized town. It has like, I don't know, 100,000 people. It's a decent sized town. I have no idea actually how many people are there, but there's people. And we drove over the hill and she was like, oh, people live here. Like completely genuine. And I was like, yes, people live here. And I was like, if that is not someone from New York City coming to New Mexico for the first time, I don't know what is, because people just don't realize there's people in places. But what I was going to say is, do you remember being in Austin and we learned about how little Austin, Texas feeds itself? And talk about perfect weather, great climate for growing things. What was the percentage? Like less than 1%, right?
It was less than 1%. I was going to say, I don't remember the exact percentage, but I know it was less than 1%.
So if a city like Montreal can provide 50% of their fruits and vegetables, it's insane to me that a town like Austin, Texas can't provide more than 1% of its food.
Okay, so that tees me up perfectly to talk about what I think is something you and I talk about generally when we have this conversation, is the support in order to make that happen. So Montreal is doing an amazing job. And one of the things that this article talked about, though, is how they are able to do that because everyone in the community is on board with this idea. So they talked about, event planners, chefs, restaurants, they all try and source locally. They have a very robust CSA, which they said is basically like what people, it's almost like their grocery stores, like they order from the CSA instead of the grocery stores. And I just thought that you know, you and I have probably said this in so many past Discover episodes, that we believe that as a nation, we could shift to eating locally. I mean, obviously there's a spectrum. I think that some people's version and vision of what that looks like is probably something I don't think is tangible, but I definitely think we could move the needle in a different direction than where we are now as a nation, for sure. And Montreal, obviously, we'll get more into it, shows us that like there's truth in that. But I feel like it comes down to consumer support. Like it will be work. It will, you have to make a choice to not order from Uber Eats, but instead like map out the CSA each week, you know, like it is work for the consumers. And I just want to applaud everyone in Montreal that makes the effort to make it happen for their city.
I want to get more into like the festivals and all of that. But one thing that's worth noting, this did not happen overnight. They launched their first community garden initiative in 1936. So I do think we can do better in cities and like seeing, you know, initiatives that we've covered on this podcast before. But it is not going to be something that is done in 5 years. It's not something that's going to be done in 10 years. Like they talked all through the history of what, you know, in the 70s, they did guerrilla gardening. So it was like tons and tons of like empty space and used it for gardening. Then into the later into the 1970s, they did even more where they had a huge garden planted. It is now the second largest garden on the island. And so they've been continually progressing over decades, not just like waking up and it's like, oh, we're now going to be, you know, an urban agriculture site.
I actually love the history portion of this article and how they talked about the city's roots in that community garden initiative. And then they moved to the relief gardens and they brought up the victory gardens. And I do want to do, I actually got on like a huge, I don't know, I was reading a ton about victory gardens because I think that that concept at that time in history is just so interesting to me. But I do want to give a little random fun fact for our discos before we get back on track. So the only remaining continuously operating World War II victory garden in the U.S., you guys, is in Boston, Fenway Victory Gardens. And it reminded me of when we talked about how Fenway has a farm on the rooftop on, I think it's like the third base side. And I just loved it so much. I don't know. I feel like that's one of my favorite facts that we've covered on the podcast so far. I use it so much in like everyday terminology. Like when people are talking about baseball, I'm like, did you know Fenway has a farm on it? And so I loved reading. I do. I keep that in my back pocket all the time. But I just loved reading that about the Victory Gardens. And I thought it was cool that there is still a garden in Boston that has been operating for that long continuously.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible. That was a really good episode. Actually, I mean, listen, if you're new to Discover Ag, there is some really great old episodes in our archives. Like, scroll back a little. Check them out.
Like, the farm on Fenway Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can Google Fenway Park or search it, and that's what will come up. I want to talk a little bit about the festival and what they've done, like, there. It is a festival that is in Montreal, and it brings in a half a million visitors, and it includes events with 52 restaurants in the city, and it is hyper focused, that is a quote, on being local, extremely local.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they make it a point. Like, they're like, if we're going to, and it is, it's like, I don't know which one comes first, the, you know, the egg or the chicken, but it is a continuous circle of like, if you're going to eat locally, you have to make it an effort. And if you're making an effort, you will eat locally. You know, I mean, they have the perfect system. They have so many cool things actually in Montreal that they talked about. They have the Urban Agriculture Lab, which is like one of Canada's first urban rooftop vineyards that has extensive rooftop gardens and pollinating beehives. They have Lufa Farms, which I kind of want to dive into. I mean, they have really cool things taking place in Montreal in order for this to happen. But people care about it. Like, it is top of mind for them.
So you mentioned Lufa Farms. I want to talk about it. It's a 300,000 square foot urban farming project. It's the world's largest, actually, urban farming project. And I feel like you say a number like 300,000 and it doesn't always, like, I don't know, it doesn't necessarily translate into anything, but this thing is huge. Something that like was crazy to me, it employs more than 600 people and grows 50 plus types of produce.
Yeah, they said in a week they'll do 25,000 pounds that goes out to over 20,000 customers. I think that's so cool. I mean, I would love that option here.
They have 400 pickup locations, or you can actually go, you know, straight from farm straight to your door. So tons of options, which again, you say you do have to work harder, which I agree. You do have to work harder. You're not just door dashing it to your house, but they have obviously built in a lot of things to make it more convenient. 400 pickup locations, mm-hmm, or delivered straight to your house. Like, that is basically like DoorDash.
I am calling on all our Canadian discos once again to show up in our DMs and talk to us about this, what you guys know about Montreal, specifically this Loofah Farms. I was on their website and I thought it was really cool. So you guys stepped up when we got into the, you know, bagged milk debacle. And I want you guys to step up with this one too. Let us know like what you are seeing if you're in this, you know, the Quebec area.
All right. Well, with that, we'll wrap up this article and this week's episode. And we will see you guys on Tuesday for a personal episode before next Thursday, getting back into our regularly scheduled content. So we will see you guys then.
This has been a 58 Ember production. For more shows, please visit the 58 Ember channel, 58ember.com, or find us at 58 Ember Media on socials.